London, now the most anti-Semitic city in the world, says Israel's Minister for the Diaspora Affairs and for Combating Anti-Semitism. And there are mass calls for Germany to close Iran's embassy in Berlin. Welcome to Constable Confidential. I'm Simon Constable, and today we're joined by Benjamin Weinthal from Jerusalem, where he's been covering what's been going on. Those two big stories we're going to get to. Ben, you write for the Jerusalem Post, Iran International, lots of other distinguished publications, including the Middle East Forum. Let's go with the first one. The quote that Israel's Minister of the Diaspora Affairs and Combating Anti-Semitism says London is the most anti-Semitic city in the world. That is really shocking and diabolical at the same time. How did you find this out, or why did he think this?
Right, Simon, thanks again for having me on. It's always a real treat. The minister, Amichai Shikli, is a member of Benjamin Netanyahu's conservative government. He's also a member of Netanyahu's Likud party. And he told me during an interview on Thursday that London is the most anti-Semitic city in the West. And I asked him, well, on what basis? And he provided a number of examples, including a report he issued, arguing that the mass demonstrations in the heart of London, which have sort of brought central London to a grinding halt, are immersed with pro-Hamas activists and supporters. And this has also, as I think we discussed in one of your previous segments, forced many Jews to flee the center of London during on the weekends when these demonstrations take place. And then he cited some other examples, including the projection of from the river to the sea on Big Ben, which he said is a call to ethnically cleanse Jews from Israel. The full slogan is "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," and it's been interpreted as a genocidal call to eradicate the Jewish state and replace it with a Muslim, Palestinian Muslim nation. And then he cited other examples of statistics and attacks in the subway, the vandalizing of the Lord Balfour portrait at the University of Cambridge.
And let's go to that now, because over 100 years ago, Balfour was part of the British government, and he made a declaration in 1917 that the British government, I'm reading from your piece, British government looked favorably upon the, quote, the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people and will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. That's a broad and very welcoming statement, or at least it sounds that way to me. So London is no longer that way, is what Amichai Shikli is saying.
Correct. London has been, at least based on my reporting over the last several decades, ground zero for rather slashing attacks against the existence of Israel. The famous, the late famous historian of anti-Semitism, or Robert Wistrich, who taught at the Hebrew University here in Jerusalem, also deemed London, where he lived, as the worst hub of anti-Semitism. That was going back well over 10, 15 years ago. So I'm not stunned that Shikli would say that, but, you know, political anti-Semitism has become a very potent force. I think that's what he's focused on, that this core feature of modern anti-Semitism that aims to dismantle Israel is what's playing out right now in London.
And let's go to some of the figures. You mentioned there were figures, and they're quite horrific when you read them. So 4,103 anti-Semitic incidents were recorded in the UK. Probably there were many more than that, actually, and some went non-recorded. And that was in 2023, and that was 147% increase compared with the previous year, 2022. And about half of that, 52%, about half of the incidents were in London. So it's concentrated in the capital city, which is by far the biggest city in the UK. That's even more horrific if you take my view.
It's very interesting because I studied in London. I did my master's at the University of Cambridge on a East German Jewish writer. So I have some surface level understanding of the United Kingdom. But what I thought was interesting recently, and that leads to me to point out that I do follow what's happening in Britain. An article that was in the Telegraph a few days last week from Jake Wallace Simons, who's the editor-in-chief of the London Jewish Chronicle, the world's oldest Jewish newspaper, he said he actually quoted George Orwell in connection with how Hamas is faking its death figures, because there's been a new study that came out from a Wharton professor, University of Pennsylvania professor at the business school, Wharton, who documented that the numbers are not real in terms of what Hamas is providing to the world. And he quoted Orwell, Jake Wallace Simons, who observed in 1945, open quote, "An ability, anti-Semitism, one of the marks of it is, I'm quoting, an ability to believe stories that could not possibly be true." And I think that's a lot of what's happening right now, just not in London, but across the Western world, where facts have sort of been dismissed and sort of raw feelings take over. And what empirical thinking has sort of been relegated to an inferior status. And you see that when Hamas presents 30,000 death, over 30,000 people killed in Gaza, 70% of whom are Hamas claims, children and women, but that figure turns out to be a bogus number, according to this new study from the Wharton School. And that doesn't surprise me because Hamas is a terrorist organization and it's lied, if you look at previous reporting about its death tolls in previous wars with Israel.
And of course, that gets embedded with something else that happens during a war, that the truth is the first casualty of war, and that is in any war. So both sides have an incentive to not necessarily tell the whole truth, because if they did, then the enemy would have some advantage over the adversary, which is interesting. Now, you talk to a man called Hoffman, Jonathan Hoffman. He's a former vice chair of the Zionist Federation in Britain, and he makes what might be considered to be an extreme remark. He says what needs to happen is water cannons at Israel hate demonstrations. Now, that's pretty brutal. What were your thoughts on that?
Right. Well, Jonathan Hoffman is a very interesting British Jewish activist from London. He's an economist. He's a veteran campaigner against anti-Semitism and has suffered because of the violence coming from the British anti-Semitic movement, threats and other forms of harassment. And his point, I think, is because we have, or Britain has, excuse me, large segments of the population that are part of these demonstrations against Israel are animated by a jihadi terrorist ideology that violates British law from his perspective, incitement to hate, calling for, violence against Jews. That there's now a need to disrupt to disband these mass protests. And I think that's what the former Home Secretary Braverman proposed before she was sacked by the British Prime Minister, that these mass pro-jihadi and anti-Semitic rallies need to be shut down. So he's not really saying anything different from her. Braverman, he's just saying how it should be done.
And that makes some big sense. I mean, certainly in the UK, there is a you have a free speech, but you do not have the right to call for others to instigate violence on people of any group or even an individual. And that certainly you can't provoke that. You can't say, hey, let's all go out and kill whoever it is, John Smith or whatever, for whatever reason, that is not right, and it's not within the legal system that should be allowed. So I do understand the position.
I would add one thing here, because you just triggered a thought or what I wanted to write about, but it was well covered. Last week, there was an British Iranian activist who is a sole protester who showed up at one of the mass rallies with a sign that Hamas are terrorists. And he was violently attacked by pro-Hamas activists and the British police.
Is that Farhad Beheshti?
Yes.
He's a very gentle man, and a gentleman as well in many ways. I've spoken to him on this show, and the fact that he's been attacked is what you're saying is horrific. He's a peaceful protester. He stands there with placards. He doesn't go after anyone violently.
Exactly, Farhad. I just want to make sure we're talking about the same person. I believe it was a different activist. I apologize if I'm not mistaken. Who was arrested? But the name rings a bell. In any event, the point I was making is that this activist was arrested instead of the Hamas, pro-Hamas supporters. He's a young man simply because he held up the sign, and the video is circulating on social media. And there were a number of articles written about him.
Well, not supporting or being against a terrorist organization should not be an illegal activity. This is horrific news, and one hopes the British government will do something about this anti-Semitism, maybe through the school system, maybe through the education system, and certainly through the legal system. That is a truly awful situation. Now, you've also been writing about the calls for Tehran's embassy in Berlin, that's the capital of Germany, should be closed. That's the goal of really more than a few people. Why is that, and why has it taken so long? Which may seem like contradictory questions, but they're both related.
Right. Well, just to revisit the activist, I his name just resurfaced, is Nayak Gorbani, who was arrested. He's who fled the Islamic Republic of Iran, and he was the one who was arrested about almost 2 weeks ago for protesting that Hamas is a terrorist organization, and he was attacked. I just wanted to clarify that, because my apologies, I mixed up the names. The Berlin situation is quite interesting, because in 2022, there's been a series of attacks on German synagogues, but one in Bochum, Germany, in West Germany, an industrial city. And there was an attempt to an attempted terrorist attack on the synagogue, and the Germans arrested a German Iranian who was then convicted of the terrorism attack. And this past week, the court ruling was issued, and it established that the Iranian regime was behind the terrorism attack. So the foreign minister summoned the Iranian ambassador, which was really nothing short of just sort of a slap on the wrist. And then Iranian dissidents in Germany and other experts on Iran, also in the U.S., told me from my Iran International report that it's long overdue for Germany to shut down Tehran's embassy in Berlin and sanction Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. That's a U.S. sanctioned terrorist organization. Britain has had very lively discussions about sanctioning the IRGC, but the foreign ministry has recoiled from the idea. So I don't think the Germans...
Can I just interrupt you one moment there? Do we know why the UK is not wanting to sanction the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. That's a question I've tried to secure answers to back when I was doing more reporting on this when it was in the news. And at the time, the foreign minister, then foreign minister Cleverly, said that this, if we sanction the IRGC, this would shut down our access to communicate with the Iranian regime. Which is really a bogus excuse because you know the Britain has sanctioned Iran's main proxy in Lebanon, Hezbollah, which is the de facto ruler of Lebanon, and Britain still talks to the Lebanese government. So they're also concerned about Britain about possible retaliation from Iran, which again shows, I think, on some level how the West. Many countries in the West, their spines have become filled with jelly. This wouldn't have happened, I think, during the Thatcher, the Margaret Thatcher period, or the Ronald Reagan period, for that matter. But that's another concern because the IRGC is operating on British soil, and there's been all sorts of media reports about surveilling Jews and attempted assassinations of Iranian dissidents, including the news organization I work for, Iran International, which is a main target of. The Iranian regime, and there's a heavy police presence in front of its headquarters in Britain. So that's and there might be other reasons too, Simon. Not to jeopardize a possible nuclear deal because the IRGC in Iran, as you know, controls over 50% of the economy, so it's a major player. And if you sanction the IRGC, that, from the British perspective, might mean you're throwing a wrench into the process of the nuclear talks, and that could somehow prevent Iran from re-entering this sort of very deficient nuclear deal that the West is trying to revive.
And that is a whole other story on that front. Now, it's not just the IRGC that people want to be sanctioned in Germany and the embassy to be thrown out, but also Iranian banks. Explain the connection there.
Right. Well, that's also an interesting topic because I'm actually working on a more in-depth piece right now for the Jerusalem Post on a study conducted by Gabriel Noronha, who was a former State Department official who served as an advisor, special advisor for Iran from 2000, I think, 19 to 2021. He's now with a think tank in the U.S. called JINSA, where he works on Iran, and he published, in any event, a very long study analyzing all the Iranian banks in Germany, France, and other countries that are operating and have been sanctioned by the U.S. government for their role in aiding Iran's illicit nuclear weapons program and its ballistic missiles program. And terrorism in general. He's with the Jewish Institute for National Security of America, and that's JINSA, and that's where the study was published on its website. So I will be approaching the governments of these countries and the regulatory authorities to see what they have to say about this report and if they're aiding Iran's illicit activities. Germany is obviously one of the centers of Iranian regime banking, and to the frustration of many Iranian dissidents and those opposed to the Iranian regime, Germany's priority has been, in short, the business of Germany is the business of exports. So they've prioritized their business dealings with Iran over national security issues for according to the critics of Germany's Iran policy.
And a lot of people are clamoring at the German government to do something about this. Why is the German government being so slow? I mean, I know that Germany's business and its country relies on exports, but the Iranian government is no friend to Germany, and it carries out terrorist attacks, or it backs terrorist attacks across Europe, but in various places. Why won't the drawbridge be pulled up, or the portcullis let down, or whatever you want to call it? Why isn't that happening as fast as we want? I know the nuclear deal is very important to Europe and America, but it doesn't seem to have stopped Iran really searching for nuclear technology. And that's been whether the deal's been on or whether the deal's been off, the same has been true.
Yeah, I mean it's a very profound question. Why is Germany not clamping down on the Iranian regime's illicit activities both within its territory and outside of its territory? I mean, this is not the first time that IRGC agents have sought to to assassinate Jews and pro-Israeli advocates. There was a previous conviction of a Pakistani who's hired by the IRGC, who was convicted, I think, about 7 years ago. I reported about him for his attempt to assassinate Jews and pro-Israel advocates, and he was imprisoned. But the German government just in a very secretive way, called in the German ambassador and told him, don't do this again. Just issued a very light warning, and that was leaked to the media, and that was well after the conviction took place. I think Germany is infatuated with the atomic accord, because if the deal is reached, that could mean over €10 billion euros a year in bilateral trade, mostly export trade to Iran. So the business community is very powerful in Germany. British WikiLeaks documents have showed that the British government has had many problems going back over 15 years to compel the Germans to crack down on these banks that are aiding Iran's nuclear weapons program, including the European-Iranian Trade Bank in Hamburg, that was sanctioned by America. And the British government, when I remember reading these WikiLeaks reports, was acutely frustrated with the Germans, and chalked it up to the fact that the German business class exercises enormous power in Germany, especially over the government. Then the other reason, I think, is just what I've heard from many Iranians living in Germany, is sort of pure soggy appeasement policies from Germany. Germany is one of the few first countries after the revolution in 1979 to reestablish relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran, or to establish relations, I should say, because it was a new regime. And Germany has celebrated, I think I've mentioned, Iran's Islamic Revolution at Tehran's embassy in Berlin. So there's this ongoing appeasement policy where the Germans think if you coddle and pamper the Iranians, you can somehow bring about a change in their behavior, which has turned out to be a miserable failure, as we know. And I think Germany's also, dominated by sort of a radical pacifist culture, where they don't want to pick fights with any countries, with the exception of America and Israel. They tend to pick fights with those two countries. But other countries, including authoritarian regimes like China and communist China and Russia and Iran and a host of other countries, Germany has historically recoiled from in terms of criticism, or picking fights, or expelling, shutting down embassies, this type of activity.
And that is fascinating, because we saw what happened after Russia invaded Ukraine for Britain, because it was clear then, and it certainly came to the forefront of the news business, that there was a lot of Russian money in the UK, and a lot of Russian oligarchs had their assets frozen in the UK and across Europe and things. Do you think that could be a similar thing if Iran declares war, or it tries to declare war in some way on Germany or the rest of the European Union or anything like that? Because it really did come to the forefront that Russia and its oligarchs were embedded in, certainly in the UK and certainly other places as well.
Right. Well, I think you raise a good point, because if you remember, at the initial phase, the nascent phase of the over 2 year war of with respect to Russia invading Ukraine, Ukraine asked for military supplies from the Great Britain. Great Britain was the first country to step up to its credit. And Great Britain asked Germany if they could fly this military hardware over Germany, and Germany refused. So that gives you a sense of the sort of culture of, I think, again, extreme appeasement in Germany, where the Germans didn't even recognize at the start of the war that there's an existential situation here that's for Ukraine, but also will spill over onto Europe if Russian jingoism is not stopped. With respect to Iran, I'm not so sure that would be as effective, because Iran doesn't have these types of oligarchs, but there are other effective punitive measures that the West could take. Bank Melli, also there's a whole European Iranian trade bank in Hamburg. Germany could shut down all of these banks and stop their over 1 billion euro annual trade relationship with Iran, and also start to diplomatically isolate Iran, because Iran hates isolationism on the diplomatic level and the political level, but also begin to target Iranian customers and other countries that are buying Iranian oil for sanctions. Germany could sanction Chinese companies that are purchasing Iranian oil. So could the Americans, so could the British. And that would effectively, I think, cause Iran an enormous amount of pain. It might influence a change somewhat in Iran's behavior. And Germany could also ratchet up its saber rattling toward, well, could establish saber rattling, I should say, toward Iran, and say, announce that they would join Israel and other countries in a coalition to stop Iran's state sponsorship of terrorism, its support of the Houthis and their attacks on vessels in the Red Sea. But Germany, has not participated in any of these activities with the British and the Americans to stop this nautical terrorism that's been sponsored by Iran and via the Houthis. So Germany needs, I guess, some type of radical form of shock therapy to jolt it out of its dogmatic slumber and make the country realize that the world post Russia invasion and post Hamas invasion is a radically different place.
It is a radically different place, and just if they to build up military presence, it does not mean you have to use it. The mere having a military defense force that is formidable may stop an invasion or an attack for many ways. Thank you very much, Ben Weinthal, writing for the Jerusalem Post and Iran International and lots of other distinguished publications, including the Middle East Forum. I'm Simon Constable. This is Constable Confidential, and that's it.